Welcome to a Racing Post special debate on coronavirus and what it means for the sport. I'm Bruce Millington and I'm delighted to be joined by Racing Post editor Tom Kerr, betting editor Keith Melrose and Dave Orton, one of our wise owls and analysts. Now, first of all, before we get into this chat, I need to get one particular caveat out of the way. We all know that the big issue here is about potentially catastrophic loss of life, damage to the economy, disruption to life as we know it. So if we go on to talk about, say, what a shame it is that Pinatubo isn't going to run in the 2000 Guineas, we're not saying that's the be all and end all, but within the context of racing, that's what we're framing this debate in. First of all, chaps, before we look to the future and possible ramifications of this, should racing definitely have been stopped? Because it was announced a few days ago that racing was going to take place behind closed doors. That happened for precisely one day. And then we found out Tuesday lunchtime that racing was going to be suspended until the end of April, at least. Keith Melrose, was it the right decision to cease racing completely, or could they have muddled on behind closed doors?
We'll only know for sure in 2-3+ years' time, won't we?
I'm asking you for a decision now.
The decision now? I think in the context, yes. I think that was it was only going to limp on until it was shut down for them if they'd kept going. And they probably felt it was better to jump than be pushed because it gives them a better position when the time comes that they can go back racing.
Tom, would you agree with that?
It's a really difficult decision, isn't it? This situation is moving so quickly. I find it absolutely incredible that a week ago today we were in Cheltenham talking about who's going to win the champion chase, and now we're in a situation where we're all in our living rooms or kitchens, and life as we know it has basically stopped. So I don't particularly envy those who made the decision. Nonetheless, I do wonder if perhaps this decision was hasty. It could always have been made a few days hence. Racing behind closed doors, which is currently ongoing in Ireland, we're waiting for a decision on whether that will continue, seems to be working well with social distancing measures put in place, connections limited in who can attend and having to leave the course quickly afterwards to limit any exposure to each other. You know, and that might seem, a funny way of carrying on, but the importance to the industry is that it keeps the wheels turning of the ecosystem, because the cost of a shutdown, of everyone stopping, is absolutely enormous. And as I say, it's a hard decision to make, but you would have hoped and that they took every possible consideration about how it could continue into account before deciding it couldn't.
Dave Orton, how much does this feel like being seen to do the right thing as opposed to actually doing the right thing? I mean, do you think this was the right call by the BHA?
Well, it surprised me, first and foremost. I think we kind of knew it was coming, didn't we? We knew that Gordon Elliott was pretty sure that Tiger Roll wasn't going to line up, for example, on April the 4th. But yet when they tell you it, you still feel a hell of a lot different, don't you, when the shock actually kicks in. I think there would have been a hotbed, a political pile driver with ambulances, the use of that. Of course, we've got to have them there. It's not like Ireland where they have, a reduced fixture list. We have four courses a day at least. Sometimes they all require two ambulances. So that was at the forefront of my mind. And I thought on that front, they probably just about got it right. However, what we didn't want on the flip side was to be thinking, will it be on tomorrow? Will it be on Thursday? I think now we have that clarification.
Okay. Keith, in terms of racing's income now, and in terms of the prize money that racing will have when the resumption finally does take place, whenever that is, obviously every day, every week that goes by, there's going to be a huge hole blown in levy finances and the money that is available to be distributed for prize money in future. I mean, to what extent or just how damaging is that going to be?
It feels like prize money's been stuck in stasis since about 2001, doesn't it? So I don't know. Sometimes
it actually hasn't. I mean, it, if you look at the graph, it's been pretty good, but obviously it then took a dip because of the betting shop closures in the wake of the FOBT restrictions. This is now another, cliff edge that the numbers are going to fall down on. And it does, that's the big concern, isn't it, when racing gets going again?
It is, and you wonder how it's going to affect the lower grade racing, because historically in the last few years, the prize money at the top end has actually done quite well, whereas at the low end, it's they've not felt the benefit to the same extent. You imagine the way ARC pay prize money at certain all-weather meetings, paying prize money down to eighth or whatever, that's probably going to be quite a shaky concession to keep offering at the end of all this. And you do feel it's going to be the ones at the lower end that suffer again before the top ones do, yeah.
And Tom, just how serious is this? If, you know, I mean, the stoppage itself is 6 weeks. Obviously, a lot of people are fairly pessimistic that will necessarily be the date when we get back going again. And obviously, nobody knows what the future holds with this. But, you know, with each week that goes by, it gets more and more serious, doesn't it, for levy revenue?
It does. Yeah, I've seen the figures of projected levy revenue. If it merely goes until the end of April, it's 9.6 million in lost levy. If it goes to the end of June and we lose Royal Ascot, which is a major earner, it's 27.6 million. The end of September is 51 million. So
which is basically half, isn't it? I mean, that cuts it in half, doesn't it?
Well, and that's just the levy, of course. The levy is actually not racing's most significant earner. Racing's most significant earner is media rights. And obviously, media rights are also suspended because there's no racing. So the cost to racing is astronomical. The cost of the bookmakers is even higher. The equivalent figures, end of April, the loss of racing profit, 97 million. June is 276 million, and end of September is 512 million. And that's just racing. So, you know, the economic hit of this stoppage is enormous.
And what does racing, I mean, I think, you know, even the biggest pessimist would agree that at some point life will start cranking back into gear. Now, that might be, you know, it might be May, it might be September. But when it does, what this means is you're going to be left with a vastly different sport, doesn't it? I mean, Dave, you know, how does the future look to you in that sense? I mean, have you owned horses before?
Yeah, I've had a couple of legs, not for a long time, but I haven't. Yeah, it's a good point. You know, the owners are going to cut sooner or later. There's going to be a big story about owners, aren't there, and fees. I mean, what about the cost of going racing for yours? We're hearing a lot of trainers at the minute saying, you know, I've got to pay my feed man, I've got to pay my staff and everything. But it obviously cost them to go racing. So look, that's one positive save. But how long can they sustain that for? 6 weeks, I think, was probably looking at the BHA decision, taking with some trainers in mind. It must have been, because some of these trainers are coming out and saying, we can survive 6 weeks. It's going to be fine. You hear John Gosden saying, please don't close at the Newmarket Heath. What about residual fitness and all that sort of stuff? It's pretty scary, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, even Keith, at the very top level, when you look at things like the basic funding, you know, there's a hell of a lot there. But once you get down to those more granular levels, you know, there's so much here that if you everywhere you look, you get stressed about it, don't you? I mean, it is, you know, you forget foot and mouth and everything else. This just blows everything else away, doesn't it? This is such a concerning crisis.
It does. And the point made about owners is a really significant one, I think, in terms of the racing that we get back, because the big owners were increasingly worried. I certainly am, as somebody who is all about watching racing and watching the horses are campaigned, about the amount of power the big owners currently have, flat and jumps. And it's not, well, Kirkenstown's a bad example, but it's not JP McManus, it's not Godolphin who are going to really be absent or diminished in their representation as a result of this. It will be smaller owners. And I wonder how that might even skew the inequality that currently exists in terms of ownership in racing even further.
And also, Tom, as well as smaller owners, smaller trainers, I mean, presumably this is going to hasten, you know, the demise of a number of these smaller yards, isn't it? Thus, presumably accelerating the situation where there are a smaller number of bigger, more powerful yards, which might at least, I suppose, if you're looking for a crumb of comfort from that, have the benefit of making those more buoyant, stable, if you'll pardon the pun, businesses. But, I mean, if you're sitting in a yard with 10 to 30 horses, this is horrific, isn't it?
Well, I think the picture in racing is very similar to the picture elsewhere in the economy. You know, whenever this crisis emerges, even if it's many months down the road, the likes of Amazon and Apple are going to be okay because they're sitting on huge cash piles. Smaller businesses don't have those cash reserves. They simply cannot cope with months of shutdown unless there's some sort of enormous government bailout, and we might hear more about that in the coming days. So those at the bottom of the ladder, the smaller yards, they're going to be in big trouble if this shutdown goes on for beyond the existing period. They're probably in trouble even if it's going on for the initial 6 weeks. Aside from them, while they're in trouble, though, the self-employed, who are a huge, huge part of the racing industry, have no fallback option whatsoever. If you're a jockey, you're a one-man band farrier, if you are part of racing's huge sort of self-employed army, then you are basically left without any income. And that is a horrifying thought. There must be a lot of people out there in the industry with and without jobs who are deeply, deeply worried about where they go from here.
And Tom, I think we all listened to the Chancellor's statement yesterday and the kind of amelioration plan that he had, $330 billion. To what extent is that accessible to those people, as you say, like farriers, jockeys, on-course bookmakers, who are, you know, in a really parlous position? Can they get their hands on some of that? Can they benefit from that?
I think we're still trying to work out exactly how and who can access that money. A lot of it seems to be in the form of government-backed loans. Now, that's great. It's good to have that source of credit. But of course, companies need to be in a position to repay that money at the end of this lockdown, and for some that won't be possible. So, you know, I anticipate and I hope that in the coming days the Chancellor is going to unveil broader measures. You know, we've already seen something like a mortgage holiday, where lots of people in racing don't own their homes. Lots of people in society don't own their homes, they rent. So I think there's going to be the necessity for a much broader package of measures which will be able to support many people, not just in racing, but in the broader society as well.
And Dave, in terms of the betting industry, I mean, we've seen the graphs on the publicly quoted larger bookmakers, and you know, they are literally, you know, off the edge of a cliff. How potentially could this reshape the betting industry? Could it lead to more consolidation, even fewer operators?
Absolutely, 100%. Could this be the birth of the real digital age as far as bookmaking, you know, is concerned? Who's going to be going, you know, shops were falling by the wayside anyway, weren't they? There's so many questions now about what will survive this and what won't, even though, you know, sort of best case scenario, we're talking at the start of May. Could that still put people off for life from doing what they know as being part of the system? Very possibly. There's obviously still, you know, a great deal of racing to bet on around the world. I know Keith's been looking into that, and we're going to get to that. Worthwhile racing at that. But for how long do people, I don't know, what sort of punter are you? You know, will the bookmakers have to start letting people on again? You know, actually getting your bets on again, that's a huge problem for people that, you know, concentrate solely on racing. I don't know. I think the independents are obviously going to feel this a lot. Actually, bumped into Barry Dennis's son, Patrick, at the weekend and was having a little chat with him. And he said, if this happens, we are in all sorts of, you know, shtum, basically. So as for the big guys, sure, they'll be absolutely fine. But it goes back to what Tom said about your Amazons and your Facebooks. And I don't know, your big corporations will be absolutely fine. It's the smaller ones. But there's so many questions that we just don't know really at this point. And that's perhaps more worrying than anything itself.
Absolutely. And I think we're still trying to kind of digest things at a top level. But if you do delve down into some of the kind of individual angles here, Keith, you know, you've got things like the Jockeys Championship, Brian Hughes, obviously a heroic effort by Richard Johnson to get back in the saddle in time for Cheltenham, didn't work. Brian Hughes, you know, champion jockey, but that's a kind of, you know, that's a hollow victory. It's not a hollow victory, he's earned it, but, you know, it's a shame we didn't get to end that. Tiger Roll in the Grand National, Pinatubo in the Guineas. I mean, you know, these are all huge on a normal day, Keith. I've just rattled off three stories that would be page 1 to 5 or 1 to 7. You know, there's so many of these stories, isn't there?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Brian Hughes is the one you don't feel for him because he's champion jockey now, really. And, you know, he won't probably worry about the asterisk beside him. From a racing point of view, I feel like the cessation of the jump season is a big story. Usually after Cheltenham, Cheltenham defines it to a large extent for obvious reasons, but normally entry in Punchestown has a chance to continue the story and really finally shape it, and that's not going to happen this year. We won't have any more of a jump season. And then you rightly say, it's the 2 and 3 year olds really that are really going to be affected by this in racing terms. Pinatubo wins a May Guineas. Does he win an August Guineas? You know, he was such a precocious horse last year. He's not very big. He's quite speedy. I would be less inclined to really think Pinatubo's a good thing for a later Guineas than a May one. So there are a lot of knock-on effects. And, you know, we're not going to have a Brocklesby where, you know, in the worst-case scenario, we don't have a Coventry. And it's how we get affected by, how these generations are affected by getting to see far less of them. It's going to be totally unprecedented. We talk about that a lot, but this genuinely is unprecedented when it comes to how we're going to look at the 2 and 3 year olds this season.
Tom, I mean, I'm basically asking something that's harder than getting the first four home in the Lincoln and the Grand National, but I'm not going to ask you when it's going to resume because no one knows that. But what has to happen before racing can resume again?
Well, again, this is such a fast-moving situation. You know, decades are happening in weeks here, so very hard to predict indeed. But I think a new normality has to break out, and that's coronavirus in retreat. Now, in China, where they basically went full lockdown, quarantined everyone, that period was about 10 weeks. So maybe that's a best case scenario. The alternative is that we as a society adjust and become more attuned to living with this disease in society, and that some limited resumption of the economy and sport and so forth takes place. Now, that might not mean a total resumption. It might not mean that we go back to having 4 or 5 meetings a day, that we suddenly relaunch the fixture list from a standing start. I could see, and this is total speculation, a potential situation where at some point, in order to get the wheels of the economy moving, we have a gradual resumption. And perhaps this is limited as something like, you know, a Lingfield or a Newcastle resuming racing, and you have this sort of regional centres. And then potentially you have an absolutely surreal situation where the cream of the fixture list might be at one of these tracks. We simply don't know. We don't know when it will be. We don't know what it will look like. We just have to hope that it's sooner rather than later.
And Dave, I mean, I'm sure you're the same. You know, we have friends who maybe love racing but don't work within it, and they labour under the mistaken belief that we know what we're talking about. And they come on and say, look, how long is this going to be? How long is this stoppage going to last? I mean, I think we need to be realistic here, Dave, don't we? We know we're not getting the National, and we know we're not going to get Sandown at the end of the year, and we know we're not going to get the Craven meeting. But, I mean, I think, you know, everything from the Guineas right through to Royal Ascot and potentially beyond are now in doubt, aren't they?
We're definitely on the Royal Ascot periphery here, guys, aren't we? 100%. And you're right, Bruce, I'm getting calls from all over the place. People internationally have called me as well or emailed me and said, will I be coming over for it? I think that's the one, and Tom mentioned, you know, the cost of the industry. I think that's the one that when that goes, we'll all start to feel a little bit different, if, of course, it goes. If it's on, then great. The one thing that Tom was talking about that made me think about, it makes you think about last year's Racing Post Trophy, doesn't it, run at Newcastle. You know, there was a lot of love for that, not just amongst your all-weather aficionados. Is it possible that we can do what they're talking about, the football situation, if that's possibly ever going to happen, where we can move everything back? Is it possible to have a Racing Post Trophy run at Christmas time? I don't know. Listen, we saw last year, you know, was that Newcastle race the shape of what's coming later in the year? Possibly.
Keith, how pessimistic are you for the future of racing here?
I was saying yesterday when I was asked, and like other guys, we're all guessing, but I thought Royal Ascot was 5-6 each of two, to be honest. I think that's going to be the bubble in my head. I can't, what we've seen elsewhere in the world, that'll be the part where we're coming down. And it's a case of whether we resume gradually, which I think is probably what will happen. I've got a lot of time for Tom's theory there that we will just drip back into it. It's not going to be on X a date. The fixture list just picks up where it was. And I assume that the emphasis will be on preserving the big races first, because the other races that generate betting turnover and interest, and that's why they'll be prioritised. So I can see that being the case. I would guess probably sometime in June, late June. I've not got an awful lot of hope for me, to be quite honest.
Keith, I'm going to sit with you for this one with your betting editor hat on. People who want a bet get in the habit of having a bet, and even though, you know, if you go onto any bookmaker, there's not nothing to bet on, but there's not a lot to bet on. I mean, the first thing I would say is that I do hope that the operators will be extremely responsible when it comes to overseeing people who might suddenly think, oh, hang on, what's this online roulette or what's this online fruit machine here? Because that, when you're doing it unsupervised, potentially had a drink, etc., is extremely dangerous. So how can people bet responsibly and feeling like they've got half a handle on what's going on? What else is there? I mean, we've obviously got the very sort of ironic fact that the greyhound racing, which is, you know, the sort of unloved but fantastic element of the betting landscape and has been around for ages, is about the only show in town as far as GB is concerned. But there's some decent foreign racing as well, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. We've obviously, you're not going to turn up and everybody can't be an expert on South Africa and Hong Kong and the US, but we're very lucky at the Racing Post. We have guys who are interested in those jurisdictions, who have a knowledge to start with, who can guide you through these races. We're already, it's been my last day and a half's work is getting these people together to a point where we can provide a service to really give punters a guide on Hong Kong and whatnot. I read Richard Young's piece this morning about the Happy Valley, found that very informative. I didn't even know until this morning that Happy Valley and Sha Tin were so different from one another, but Richard told punters exactly why that's the case. He's been doing Hong Kong racing for quite a number of years now and is a good man to follow in that regard. We've got guys who've been doing South African spotlights for a long time. We've got guys who take an interest in US racing. Tom Collins does Sky Sports Racing punditry shifts on US racing, and he's going to be doing a lot of stuff in the US. So we've got guys at the Post who can guide people through foreign jurisdictions if they should want a bet. You know, I'll be perfectly frank, I'm probably not going to do much betting in the next few months because I personally don't really know these jurisdictions, but I know these guys know what they're talking about in this regard. And yeah, they're very much worth checking out and seeing whether what these right tickles you to want a bet, because these guys do know what they're talking about.
And Dave, you're obviously a keen punter as well as one of the Racing Post leading analysts. How will this affect your punting? Will you completely just take a break now, or will you keep your hand in? Eurovision Song Contest off now, isn't it? So that's no good.
Yeah, Tom Kerr's absolutely crushed about that, as we learned as we were just about to start recording this. And I'm sure a lot of people will be. Some of the people in the analyst department, they look forward to that each year for good reason. My punting, it might actually not change that much. And there's two reasons for that. I follow Australian racing closely. This weekend, you've got some huge racing down there. There's their Golden Slipper, for example. It's a monster of a race as well. I implore people to go and study up on this. They're racing down there. The prize money is insane, you know. And the boys in blue at Godolphin, they've got a massive operation down there. Horses that you'll probably recognise. Adabe is down there at the moment for William Haggis. It begs the question of, will he now stay there, doesn't it? You know, there are lots of races coming. It's a very, very important time for Australia. They're about a month ahead of us. I mean, Bruce, you've been down there recently as well, haven't you? And you've seen what it's like. It's so, so important to them. And the quality of the racing, this is what people are going to be wondering about that don't know it. Let's face it, sometimes you watch, I don't know, something at Poe on Sky Sports Racing, or you watch the Vala or something, you're looking at it and think, oh, I just can't be betting on that. It reminds you of when people didn't like Southwell, you know, on the all weather and things like that. There was a massive punter transition that had to happen there. It's going to happen. Have a look down there. There are some absolute superstars running. And a lot of my betting this winter, serious betting, has been in Australia. I've been able to get on. And let's face it, the weather we've had, I wasn't doing all that much jump racing. Why? Because I just couldn't get it right on the ground. So I was betting a lot on the all-weather. It begs the question of the all-weather championships as well. We're talking about your Tiger Rolls not being able to run at Aintree. What about all those horses like Black Op that had swerved Cheltenham to go to Aintree? The all-weather championships, you know, they've been their fast-track qualifiers throughout the whole winter. All these horses are going to miss out now. But to answer your question, on a punting perspective, the show is very much going on for me looking at Australia. Ron Wood, for example, I was having a conversation with him, the form editor now. Will it be on, you know, in May down on the 28th of March? Again, five or six, one or the other, like Keith said. He seems to think they may relish being the centre of attention there. But at the same time, I spoke to someone that did all the travel over the Saudi Cup, you know, at the weekend, and he was like, I just don't see how they can possibly keep it on the road.
And Dave, has there been much in the way of political pressure or pressure from the media to cease racing in Australia?
Well, yes, of course. If you remember last year, the Australian Racing Authorities had to deal with two massive stories, didn't they? The equine welfare, obviously, we all saw what happened there. And Darren Weir's situation as well. So they've been massively in the political eye anyway last year. This is a potential opportunity for them to right all those wrongs. And, I mean, Melbourne at the moment are now considering whether racing should still go, you know, ahead or behind these closed doors. But Sydney are like, we are going ahead with our autumn championships. But how long can that really last? Well, I don't know. We'll see.
And Tom, I mean, you thought you were given a curveball last year with equine flu, finding things to keep fueling in the paper. This dwarfs that, doesn't it? There is still plenty going on, isn't there? You and the team have been racking your brains and making sure the creative glands are pumping away. What have we got to enjoy in the Racing Post in the coming weeks?
Yeah, Bruce, I long for the days of equine flu now. My nostalgia for that 6-day shutdown is unbounded. The funny thing is about a situation like this is actually we're busier than ever because it's an enormous news story for racing as for the rest of the world. Our first priority is obviously finding out what this means for the industry and for those who care and follow horse racing. We're trying to sort of nail down every angle we can think of so that we can provide the most up-to-date, relevant, important information to our readers. That's our first priority. Second is, as Keith said, we're looking at what action there is on and weighing up whether it's got merit to our customers and where it does. Stuff, the good quality stuff such as Hong Kong, US, Australia, and coming up hopefully at Maidan, we're providing experts to give our readers information so that if they want to place a bet, they can do so from an informed position. And we're quite lucky that we get data feeds in from all around the world. We have the form, we have the experts. So those who are looking for some racing action, they can still do it if they're interested in these jurisdictions. Of course, also the dogs are still going strong and our dogs experts are in their element. So we've got plenty of dogs coverage as well. And, you know, there's drips and drabs of sport going on as well. Not a lot. I did see the other day that one of the betting operators was betting on the Myanmar under-21s. Not for me personally, but who knows. But yeah, a really busy time. We're keeping everyone informed. We're keeping them abreast of what racing action is going on. And over the coming weeks as well, we'll be focusing on producing lots of entertaining, insightful reads as well. We're all going to go a bit stir crazy in our front rooms, I suspect. So we'll do our best to keep everyone entertained as well.
Okay, well, I can break the news that the Belarusian Premier League is resuming. So Mark Langdon and the guys on the football desk have got a bit to write about. Keith, last word to you. I mean, as betting editor, your main responsibilities is marshalling a team of experts to give people the best possible betting advice. But on a general point here, there is a danger that some people are going to start getting a little bit bored and maybe veering into areas of websites that perhaps they shouldn't do as far as betting goes. I mean, it's so important, isn't it, that people don't just bet on things they've got nothing, that, you know, they've got no opinion of, and particularly, you know, games of chance, isn't it?
Absolutely. No, it's a certain type of punter that appeals to, and it's hard for me to speak to people like that because I'm lucky. It's never been something that's really drawn me games of chance. When I end up in a casino, it's always blackjack and never roulette for me because you have some influence on how that game's going to pan out. As we will try and keep people, sports betting is what we do, and we're going to try and keep people engaged with that as much as we can. People who do end up in places like that, it would always be my recommendation to anyone, bet in the games that you can influence to a degree, and you know, that is things like blackjack and whatever. But it's always sports betting for me. I would always take a sports bet over any type of casino bet, and would hope a lot of people would feel to do the same, because it is just that extra buzz of getting a sports event right that I'm not sure you really get so much with games where it's just turning over and random number generation essentially. So hoping that we can keep people informed in that regard. And just to add to what Tom said as well, I've got people like Paul Keeley and Tom Siegel who are going to be writing a lot of stuff about their general way of looking at punting. We're going to do a lot looking back at Cheltenham. We can do some really in-depth Cheltenham retrospectives, and you can look out for that coming in the paper over the next couple of weeks as well.
And Dave, it doesn't do any harm for a punter to just take a little backward step and have a little bit of a break and maybe just analyse what they're good at, what they're not good at, maybe look at some figures and just clear their minds a bit.
Yeah, I think that's a great shout, actually, Bruce. Absolutely. This is the one positive, you know, as a society that we may possibly take out of this pandemic is that we are, you know, we're going to have some downtime. We're all on this, you know, rat race, aren't we, the whole time, chasing the wheel, trying to control everything. Absolutely right. I think do take it out. And yeah, what a great time to become more of a systematical punter. There's always been this thing in horse racing with, in other words, gambling being a bit of a dirty word, because punters, you know, that's what horse racing bettors like to be called, isn't it? Punting. They don't go into casinos and put it all on red or do all the chance. Exactly what Keith said, something you can influence and you can back your opinion on. That will be greatly tested, I think, through this period, whether, you know, loads of punters are going to become gamblers. Let's hope that's not the case. And like you say, Bruce, the big firms definitely have that responsibility to take there. However, I do think that we just need to absolutely take a pull, enjoy taking a pull, and definitely look at what you're good at.
Absolutely. Okay, Tom, Keith and Dave, thank you very much. Obviously, like I say, the key here is for everyone to stay healthy and to stop the spread of this virus. Keep it with the Racing Post every day for all the very best and all the latest news on this fast developing situation. Thanks very much for watching.